Probing further, we discovered that animals were the outward manifestation of Jack's need to feel superior to people who were different from himself. This particular spiritual activity was a wake-up call before his current life. It was fortunate that we were able to uncover Jack's memory about this event before the end of the session. As you complete your line of questioning about the many spiritual activities of your clients, be aware of the differences in perception between the more advanced souls and everyone else. Perhaps the limitations of our physical brain impose a filter for soul information from the spirit world. The average client tends to separate out one visual image or activity at a time in their reporting. A few clients, however, find a constant unification of spiritual wisdom. They appear to receive a simultaneous flow of significant messages from all their soul activities. Life and body selection. The last major phase of a spiritual regression session is conveying your client back to the region where they viewed their current body just before incarnation. Souls don't go to this spatial area unless they are ready to incarnate into another life. Chapters 12 and 13 in Journey of Souls and Chapter 9 in Destiny of Souls give many details about how clients view their next life and the bodies offered to them for this new life. As with other spatial areas in the spirit world having specific functions, your clients will give you different names for this zone. The most common are the Place of Life Selection, the Screening Room, or the Ring of Destiny. You will find that the space of life selection and body review is usually visualized as round, with large panels or screens that appear as transparent sheets of liquid energy. It is presented as a theater in the round, where futuristic scenes of people and events are displayed for the soul who is ready to enter a new life. The actions of your clients in this space will fall into two categories. A. Souls who prefer to just observe the scenes. B. Souls who wish to actually participate by entering the scenes of their choosing. These two preferences in the life selection room depend on the character of the soul, their particular inclinations at the time of the visit, and the nature of the life to come. Some souls are just accepting, especially the younger ones, while others have more of an analytical and investigative nature. From the panels in front of them, many souls seem to be able to control the movement of scenes that show a number of possible futures in various lives. It seems logical that manipulations are performed by the soul mind, yet clients report using earthly mechanical descriptions to describe this function with such terms as buttons, knobs, dials, and levers. In my books, I have said that for the most part, the specialists or directors who control this space are not seen by the soul, yet the incarnating soul is aware someone is in charge, monitoring the action. Some souls have their guide with them, while others do not. My cases indicate that the timelines involved with events and chronological periods associated with different bodies shown in the panels are edited. This depends on the nature of the upcoming life, the karmic lessons to be addressed, and the soul involved. Among the many variables here is the fact that the same soul may be given more viewing options for some lives and less in others, just as we are given more body choices before some lives than others. You will have clients who see most of the life to come in increments of childhood, adolescence, adulthood, and old age, while another individual might see only one short segment of their life. Prior to some lives, your client will be offered only one or two body choices. At other visits to the place of life selection, they may be given up to five. There is always a leading candidate. Souls seem to know which body would be their best choice for learning, and they usually choose it. For instance, your client might say that there are three options: an easy, moderately accommodating, or very difficult body. Also, the life choices for those bodies could be defined as uncomplicated, rather hard, or arduous. The reasons for this range of choices involving the next life depend upon motivational desires and certain karmic issues, as well as the evolutionary age and past performance of the soul. Quite often, your client will be unable to explain the rationale and wisdom behind all the variables connected with a particular life and the body offerings for that life. Future timelines are an integral part of the life selection screening rooms. In physical Earth time, the screens seem to be offering snapshots of events with possibilities and probabilities. Apparently, there is no certainty of any event in future time on Earth, because then our lives would be totally deterministic, with no free will. The laboratory of Earth would be a poor testing school if we were governed by fate. I believe there are an indefinite number of futures connected to a present in the now time of the spirit world, and yet, while there must be many futures, souls seem to view the most likely futures in a matrix of possibilities and probabilities. On the screens, events and opportunities of a future life may be enlarged and drawn out, or reduced in size for soul analysis. It is like looking at the large trunks and smaller branches of trees. I use this analogy because some timelines combined with certain life scenes seem more prominent than others. I have already spoken about how now time in the spirit world seems to be a conglomeration of past, present, and future. Picture streams of energy waves containing events flowing out into the future and back from the past, meeting in the center, at the vortex of the spirit world. Souls from Earth are able to visualize sitting in the library and watching a computer-like screen displaying all the nuances of their past lives. In the life selection room, they are given the same opportunities for examination of the immediate future, but in less overall detail. Since we are given samples of the future, this engagement must come under the heading of future time progression. My feelings on timelines and free will are expressed more fully in Chapter 9 of Destiny of Souls. I will just add here that there are those quantum theory scientists who believe that we will always find ourselves in now events that have high probabilities, and so this would tip the scales toward determinism. Thus, because of fewer possibilities, the future would make free will less equal due to predeterminism. However, my clients are convinced that the future offers many different choices, and each now frame of time exists simultaneously with all the other possible nows. We cannot know if alternating realities are interlocking within one reality or parallel realities exist adjacent to one another. It is quite possible that in the now time of the spirit world, events on Earth are not actually moving, but may only be on different timelines that seem to move in our aging physical universe. What I believe is that with every situational event, people have the opportunity to make choices and effect mid-course corrections in their lives. Because we can approach the same event in different ways, the outcome of these events that affect us can be altered. I ask those who think events cannot be changed by free will if they can at least accept the fact that our reaction and behavior toward those events can make some difference to the outcome. Some potential clients are curious if I conduct hypnosis progression. I do not. In the life selection room, apparently souls are only able to view scenes in their next life and not beyond. Incidentally, if I have a 40-year-old client reviewing what he saw before his current life, this person is not going to be able to relate anything beyond the age of 40. Events beyond 40 have not yet happened, so he can't peek. Experimenting earlier in my career with future time progression, I found most people are blocked by their guides from seeing lives far into the future. This allows for long-term self-discovery by the soul. Once in a while, a client will get a flash of a possible future, such as being on a starship in the 23rd century, but these brief pictures are hazy and indistinct. In my Star Trek cases, I couldn't help but feel that their conscious desires, such as wanting to be a starship commander, interfered with objective reporting and became wishful thinking. Most clients believe trying to look into the future is something that is best left to the planners. The bottom line for me is that I do not think attempts to facilitate future time hypnosis progression is productive in LBL therapy. Once you have prepared your client for the life selection room, you will be a witness to the decision-making involved with their current life and body. The following series of questions will hopefully elicit meaningful information. 1. How are you notified it is time to reincarnate, and who tells you? 2. Would you describe your desire to come forward again as strong, moderate, slight, or resistant? 3. Have you ever said you were not ready for a new life? If so, what were the circumstances and final results? 4. Do you go to the place of life selection alone or with your guide? 5. Are you aware of any other higher beings working in the life selection room? 6. Describe the surroundings and tell me what you see and do. 7. How many body choices are available to you? Please describe each in detail. 8. What do you think each body offers you? 9. Is there a leading body candidate? And was this the body you chose? Why did you reject the others? 10. When you see the body you chose in your current life, do you see it on the screens in live action? Can you regulate the action yourself, or does it seem someone else is controlling the movement of scenes for you? 11. Are you an observer, or do you actually enter scenes of your current life as a participant? 12. What scene interests you the most, and why? 13. What did you learn before you came to the place of life selection that helped you make the decision for a certain body? 14. While you are watching a variety of life scenes, are some more appropriate for certain body choices than others? 15. What does this body mean to you in terms of advantages and disadvantages? Explain the most significant positive and negative aspects of your body. 16. How does the brain of this body differ from other recent bodies you have occupied? 17. What is your primary mission in life, and has it changed from what you see now in the life selection room? 18. Are the goals in this life different from other lives? If so, in what way? 19. Do you see certain people on the screens you are supposed to work with in this life? 20. Is there anything you see on the screens that we have not discussed? Is some entity preventing you from telling me everything you see? There are many ways in which clients describe this spiritual experience. Some will give you running descriptions of all the scenes, while others are rather vague. You will have clients who will watch or participate in the scenes for a while and then don't want to see any more of their future life once they make their body choice. There are souls who have the attitude, "I trust they know what they are doing and I don't need to see anything." Always keep in mind that while your client is visualizing their experience in the life selection room, they are capable of answering questions about their current life. The most obvious inquiry near the end of the life selection experience would be a follow-up to question 16. Are you living your life according to what you are viewing on the screens? If not, what is different and why? Connections between body and soul. In the life selection room, some clients first see the body they will eventually occupy without their soul. This is because the live action has not yet begun on screen. I remember a client telling me, "Initially we look at images of bodies lined up for us with no souls. They have their brains but are robotic, empty things." Once the screens are activated, your clients will rapidly connect with these bodies so they can see and feel what it would be like for their soul to be part of that body. Once in a while, a client will tell you they are rejecting a body because it doesn't feel right. On very rare occasions, you could have a client say they made a mistake in their body choice in a former life and asked to be released from that body during the first month after their entry into the fetus. Another soul will take this assignment. However, out of all my cases, not once have I ever had a walk-in soul who joined a body after birth. I try not to be preachy in my LBL training classes, but there are hypnosis practitioners who are attracted to the walk-in theory, and this does bother me. My views on this subject are expressed in Chapter 3 of Destiny of Souls. I know anything is possible, but my clients deny walk-ins exist, because our spiritual masters are too wise to allow for such an abomination as possession of the mind by other entities. The whole concept about outside entities who are able to occupy our minds is based on superstition and fear from the Middle Ages. People who disagree with me argue that the walk-in is supposed to be engaged in an act of benevolence. If you read my prior case studies on how souls join the fetus to meld with the developing human brain, you will see it as a slow, delicate process of incredible subtlety. A good example is Nancy's case that I described in this text earlier. The probing by the soul begins gently, carefully following the neurotransmitters of the brain while matching their own energy vibrations with the mind of the baby. Just imagine the shock to the adult human mind for one soul to substitute the energy of its immortal character for another in midlife. I believe this would lead to either insanity or death. Integration of a soul with the human brain is one of the most complex elements of spiritual regression. I discuss the many aspects of the soul-brain partnership through case studies in both my books. Essentially, most people feel reasonably comfortable with the duality of soul and brain that exists within their bodies. Still, there are others who may be moderately or even severely disturbed by the relationship. The LBL therapist must be cautious about making judgment with regard to the source of a client's mental disturbances. For instance, people have often asked me if the underlying cause of multiple personality disorder, MPD, could be a reoccurrence of personalities surfacing from former lives. I believe MPD represents massive repression of a single current personality traumatized by earlier events in this lifetime. The mentally ill MPD wishes to dissociate themselves from painful memories, often connected with childhood abuse. They escape into other non-past life personalities to avoid the reality of their own psyche. With the ordinary person, I believe a disruptive association between the soul and brain, soul duality, is much more likely than any MPD symptoms to create confusion about who we really are. Another consideration about mental illness is the fact that certain bodies have a predisposition to abnormal brain chemistry and hormonal imbalances. Combine this with physical and emotional abuse as a child, and you have a formula for a disturbed mind. I feel that if such a mind has a younger, inexperienced soul, they are less able to cope, and thus become contaminated and even trapped inside a sick biological mind. Thus, the soul is unable to function properly. The soul has an immortal character that is combined with a human brain and central nervous system, producing a given emotional temperament in our bodies. This melding creates one temporary personality in one lifetime. I call this essence the principle of self. Personal identity involves both conscious and unconscious memories, and thus finding our real self can be elusive. In forming a perception of who we really are, people rely too much on examining their emotional and sensory reactions to information from the brain. The physical mind can fool us into believing we are who we might think we are, based upon environmental influences from this planet and our emotional reaction to them. Self is broadly identified by thoughts, memories, and perceptions of life that are influenced by an immortal consciousness, our soul. We look in the mirror and ask, "Why am I me?" Adding to this confusion over identity, our personality, our soul ego and biological ego, develops and changes in uneven ways throughout a lifetime. While the biological ego changes rapidly over our life, the evolution of the soul's ego takes much longer. The core self provides the underpinning of our real personhood that influences emotional temperament and personality. All these elements are integrated into one human being. I believe that when this delicate integration is fractured, it fosters mental illness and perhaps criminal behavior. When our soul self is reached, we are able to perceive the internal distinctions of our immortal character. This gives us a deep sense of true individuality and a better conceptual understanding of who we really are as a whole person. Thus, LBL therapy seeks to help the client recognize their complete self by recovering unconscious memories of the joining of mind and body. LBL therapy is actually a spiritual quest for better self-understanding. A client's soul self may be quite different or rather similar to the emotional temperament of their host body. Souls rely on spirit world planners to find the best candidates for a partnership that will address their strengths and weaknesses. The choice of a particular body is intended to combine a soul's character defects and strengths with certain strong and weak human emotional temperaments to produce specific trait combinations for mutual benefit. The biological mind of a human being is linked to a soul who then provides imagination, intuition, insight, and conscience. With this union, we are one person dealing with two internal ego forces inside us during life. This combination represents the duality of mind and spirit in our bodies. The two egos may blend well or show conflicting impulses, leading to manifestations of neurotic anxiety. They may be in opposition or in conjunction with one another. Just because you find the two egos in opposition does not automatically mean a lack of harmony and balance. The example I usually give is that of a low-energy passive soul who might wish to combine with a restless, aggressive brain in order to combat the soul's natural inclination toward being tentative. On the other hand, if a powerful, self-indulgent soul with a tendency to control others is conjoined with an aggressive body, the mixture could prove to be volatile. The identification of their true self through LBL therapy is not a guarantee that conflicting emotions and attitudes will be resolved by the client. Nevertheless, this therapy goes a long way in laying a more balanced psychological foundation of self-image through personal observation and self-reports. This should inspire greater perception and personal healing in your client's life. For you, as the therapist, a major consideration of the LBL session is to explore the duality of egos within every hypnosis subject. I have a case that illustrates a conflict of egos in opposition to one another. When I include this case in a training lecture, my listeners tend to call it the case of the dynamic duo. The following excerpt is from a 35-year-old unmarried woman, Lois, who is the sales manager for a large international company. Lois has a rather young soul, called Mawana, who has only been coming to Earth for around 500 years. All this soul's previous lives have been as a man. Up until the current life, Mawana has always selected bodies on the basis of host compatibility. Now this has all changed. The scene I will describe occurred when I took my subject to the area of life selection just before her current life. Dr. N. How many choices of host bodies are you given? Mawana. 2. One is a man, the other a woman. I have the option of choosing another man like the ones I've had before, but I'm going to take the woman because I must start expanding. Dr. N. Well, Mawana, how does Lois look to you when you first see her? Mawana. Ugh, skinny, high-strung, hair all over the place. God, she is so frantic. Oh, she is going to be a pistol to work with. I'm really setting myself up this time. Dr. N. Meaning your past host bodies have not been so difficult in the melding, but this choice will be a change for your natural character? Mawana. Yes. You see, I am a quiet, analytical soul. I carefully consider things before making a decision. Dr. N. And why do you need a change? Mawana. Because after examining all the possibilities of any situation, I wind up not wanting to take any risks in my lives. Dr. N. Are you telling me you have an indecisive soul? Mawana. Oh, I don't think so. I'm just cautious. Dr. N. And the body of Lois, what is her temperament like? Mawana. A bomb ready to explode. She is off the wall. Always initiating projects which lead to emotional quagmires. Dr. N. Mawana, if this is the major area of contrast between your character and the temperament of your host body, what will you gain from this association that you did not have before in your other bodies? Mawana. Long pause. It is hard for me to admit this, but I have been comfortable with emotionally cold hosts. It is so easy for me to be an observer and not fully commit to things, especially in my relationships. I have not been open to people. Dr. N. I see. And what has life been like for you in the body of Lois? Mawana. A roller coaster ride. She is so complicated. Jumping into situations without much thought, always ready to give all of herself to everything. I avoid anxiety. She does not. I am a plotter. She is self-motivating. Dr. N. She expresses herself directly where you are more indirect. Moana. That's putting it mildly. I try to slow her down, but she is almost reckless. Tearfully. Especially with men. Really, there are times when she is out of control and brings us so much emotional pain it is overwhelming. Dr. N. And how does all this make you feel, Moana? Moana. Trapped. Note. I stop here for a while to comfort my client and get her back in focus on why she chose this body and how she can learn from it. Dr. N. Tell me what the two of you have in common. Moana. Recovered. We are both caring in our own way. I'm more tentative about it. She brings out a warmth in my nature that I have found hard to express in the past. We both have intense pride and are not prone to anger or being vengeful with people who hurt us. Dr. N. So that aspect of your ego duality has been rather harmonious? Moana. Somewhat reluctant. Yes. This part is an easier adjustment. Dr. N. Okay, then. What is the one trait she has that you have most benefited from, Moana? Moana. She is always ready to trust because she loves people. I am never bored and lonely as I was in my past lives. She pushes me. Dr. N. And where do you help her the most? Moana. It has taken me a lot of time, but finally I am getting her to slow down a little and think before she jumps. We explored the differences between the bodies of men and women, and I learned that Moana, as a man, was rather self-centered and selfish with women. I think the change in direction by this soul, due in no small part to serious counseling between lives by her guide, was the result of being fed up with poor relationships due to a lack of bonding as a man. I believe our session together helped Lois and Moana to see each other in a clearer light. Lois has started to listen more to her inner self after a long series of emotionally destructive relationships. Months after the session, Lois wrote to me to explain that she is now more aware that both her egos are learning from each other, and she is striving to bring balance into her melded personality, as she calls it. Apparently, the two egos are achieving a symbiotic relationship at last. When a person's behavior appears to have little or no connection to self, I think of an individual struggling to find their soul. One client told me, "I am a quiet soul with an affinity for open, accepting human minds. They are just easier for me during the joining." Another client had an opposing viewpoint. "I want resistance from an opposing brain right from the beginning because the work is more demanding and a greater challenge when we are not alike. Both of us will gain more from the association." There are no magic formulas in LBL work. Each case must be individually evaluated. When I interact with a client about their body and soul duality, I ask myself three primary questions. A. Is the intended goal of my client's soul ego thwarted by different interests and motivations posed by their current body? What activities produce gratification as opposed to anxiety? B. Is the duality of my client's soul-mind and body-mind pulling them in opposition or conjunction, and are either of these conditions intentional for progress? C. Is my client socialized within his or her environment and human society, or does this individual feel depersonalized, perhaps with thoughts that they do not belong on Earth? Generally, souls have more resistance from some bodies than others in their long span of physical incarnations. To the spiritual regressionist working with disturbed clients in trance, it may appear that a struggle is going on with the soul trying to cope with the neurosis of a human organism. The spirit has the power to heal the body, while the body has the power to shut down the soul with primitive defense mechanisms. A primary goal of the LBL therapist is to assist clients in their search for internal harmony through greater comprehension about themselves and their origins. You want this self-assessment by the client to continue long after their session is over. During my lectures, I am often asked, "What about those souls inside physically disabled bodies? Why would anyone choose to live such confining and painful lives? Some members of my audiences believe the souls who occupy crippled bodies were sent into them without prior knowledge because no other soul would want them. In my experience, this is not true. Souls volunteer for the really difficult lives and are encouraged in the life selection room to see what is in store for them. We are not sandbagged by guides. Souls know in advance about the specific karmic lessons they will face and how they would benefit from living a burdensome life. I had a client who was a teacher for disabled children. One of her pupils is a wheelchair-bound boy by the name of Josh. This boy is so disabled, he can hardly move or speak. She told me Josh talks with his eyes and facial expressions and has a wonderful smile. In deep hypnosis, my client saw Josh as a member of a more advanced soul group to which she also belongs. We learned that Josh has an aggressive, domineering, action-oriented soul with such powerful energy vibrations that he tends to override most of the quiet, introverted bodies he has chosen. Conversely, this soul sends extroverted, high-strung bodies out of control. She told me that it was mutually decided that the soul of Josh needed to experience a body which forced him to be still and contemplative. The assignment appears to be working. Naturally, extroverted and introverted souls learn from all their associations with thousands of bodies during their incarnations. We are given the bodies we need to overcome major obstacles encountered in life. It has been said that we are never given more in life than we can handle, and to a large extent, this seems to be accurate. We are who we are by design. There is a question I like to ask clients that can be very enlightening. Of all the bodies you have occupied, which one was your most favorite, and why? Therapeutic benefits of spiritual regression. As an LBL hypnotherapist, your preferences may lean toward the psychoanalytic, behavioral, gestalt, insight-oriented, or free association approach, to name some therapies. Actually, I have seen a great diversity of philosophic orientation with my LBL students. Perhaps this is because many hypnosis practitioners are eclectic humanists. While this textbook reflects my own style, I believe there is no all-encompassing right way to practice LBL therapy. Many psychological approaches can be effectively integrated into spiritual regression. Occasionally, a prospective client, particularly someone who has been exposed to more traditional psychotherapy, will ask about the psychological and clinical aspects of LBL hypnotherapy beyond what you would normally discuss during the intake interview. I think in the beginning it is best to avoid long psychological explanations, even if you are inclined to do so, because this is not really what the client wants to know. I find what captures the attention of most clients is a brief discussion of hypnotherapy in general terms and its therapeutic use in uncovering the soul. I stress the importance of a harmony of energy between the soul, mind, and human body. Whenever possible, keep things simple to avoid creating concerns, especially with a client who is anxious about any sort of intervention. It is wise to make it clear that while LBL hypnosis is a powerful tool for spiritual memory recall and conflict resolution, by itself, it is not psychotherapy. With some clients who press me further about therapy, I will say that regression into the unconscious mind to recover memories of past lives and the soul state between those lives becomes curative when there is acquisition of greater insight into our true self. I tell the client this process allows for greater enlightenment of the conscious mind, particularly with the release of any stored negative energy. Frankly, I would prefer not to go into further detail in this area of therapy before the session because it could lead to misconceptions. I want the client to begin our work with an open mind. However, therapeutic revelations at the end of the session are another matter. Once your client is in a superconscious state, they will know what is psychologically obstructing their potentialities far better than you imagined. As the session progresses, this self-awareness assumes even greater proportions. In my view, the difference between past life regression and spiritual regression is that LBL therapy allows for an easier transformation of perception. The client moves from seeing themselves in lives comprised of many temporary personalities to viewing a true version of self, emanating from one recognized immortal character in a spiritual setting. As the spiritual regression session draws to a close, I want to know the following therapeutic information. A. Is my client at a place in the session where they are able to identify their soul's desires and aspirations? B. Are they able to make meaningful interpretations about the spiritual message they have received? C. Within their script of life, do they have the capability of acting on their new awareness by restructuring negative imprints? Despite having had prior psychotherapy, many clients will come to you with negative behavior patterns and poor attitudes. Hypnosis regression enables therapists to more quickly assess the roots of emotional injuries. Yet trauma is not cured by just remembering the source. A client has to understand the meaning behind events and how all experiences affect the soul. Through LBL therapy, reducing the distortions and confusion arising out of current emotional dilemmas gives the client a chance to pull back a curtain, revealing their higher selves. This allows them to observe their whole personhood in a more objective light. Working with clients in their soul state is not just limited to visions of life between lives. With certain subjects, it is possible to use the duality of mind and spirit effectively in traumatic scenes involving the client's current incarnation to elicit information directly from their soul. This technique is similar to the three-way conversations I described between facilitator, subject, and guides under Case 13 in Journey of Souls. Third-party communications can be just as effective between facilitator, subject, and the soul. The voice sounds of the client may change when they are talking through their own soul, just as it can when a guide is communicating through them. In my own LBL, facilitated by a skillful and intuitive hypnotherapist, I was in a scene in my current life at age 7, being dropped off at a boarding school. My soul seemed to be hovering over my body. Later, when I listened to my tape recording of this portion of the session, I realized I had been speaking in a different tone of voice as my soul objectively described the need for instilling courage and resolve into the mind of a little boy overcome by loneliness and the sadness of parental abandonment. The intensity of this therapeutic avenue is very revealing. In my years of work, I found that when the client sees themselves as an immortal being in their mind's eye and discovers that they are not just here by biological chance, they begin to address their inner truths. While appreciating the conflicts from their historical past, releasing them and reframing perceptions of who they really are moves them forward in life. Clients are more capable of coming to terms with their place in the scheme of things when they see their immortality. After an LBL session, they know there is order and purpose, and they have a part to play in this scheme. This insight allows for restructuring their model of the world and the management necessary to complete goals. Although it is short-term, I am not suggesting that LBL therapy is a quick fix for the client's problems. Former clients have written me years after their LBL sessions to explain they continue to process the information they acquired. Nevertheless, they have a better grasp of reality and their place in a perplexing world. They feel more focused and productive and aware of the hurt suffered by others. Spiritual regression gives clients the realization that they are not alone, even if their life is solitary. This is because they are able to see their immortal connections to a community of soul companions who are, or were, in the bodies of relatives, lovers, friends, and acquaintances. To know for certain that you have value to others in the cosmos, regardless of your present surroundings in life, is very empowering. I recommend to my clients that they spend some quiet time each day getting in touch with the powers who watch over them. This is easier with their newfound knowledge, and it fosters internal peace. Solitude, away from the everyday distractions, opens channels to an intuitive inner voice. When I ask clients in a soul state what they do in the spirit world to bring themselves into a keener state of awareness, they say they go into seclusion and focus on the pure state of their being. Of course, this is easier for a discarnate because they are unencumbered by the sensory and emotional input of a physical body and all the material distractions of life. Even so, The concept is the same for an incarnated soul. One of the gains of reconnecting with the spirit world on a regular basis after an LBL session is contacting spirit guides. We have seen the benefits in spiritual regression where clients become familiar with their personal spirit guides. When I work with a client in LBL therapy, I feel both the presence of my own guide and that of my client's guide monitoring me. There is no doubt in my mind that I am being assisted in uncovering psychological elements that may be inhibiting my client's progress. Never forget that it is your client's guide who is their primary therapist, not you. After the client leaves your office, it is their master teacher whom they will turn to in future for solace. Spirit guides are the ultimate personal therapists. Regardless of the intentions of each client and the frustrations you will encounter in this work, all clients must be treated with deference and understanding. I believe in challenging my clients, but an LBL facilitator has to be careful during final therapeutic evaluations never to place the client on the defensive or cause them to feel threatened by the revelations you have helped them to uncover. Because the use of hypnotherapy in LBL work is such a powerful medium, it can subvert the practitioner into a personal power trip. Humility is the key to being an effective healer, because you are being guided by a power greater than yourself. It is far more compelling to demonstrate nurturance and empathy rather than authority. This goes to the issue of your own self-concept, skill of expression, and experience. Spiritual regression, involving the exposure of the soul, embodies a sacred trust, and we must honor it. Part 6. Closing the Session. Preparation for Embarkation. When the review of your client's last visit to the life selection area is completed, the end of the session is near. By way of review, Chapter 14 in Journey of Souls is devoted entirely to the soul's preparation for embarkation. In my training classes, students ask, "Do all souls prepare for a new life in the same way?" The answer is no, they don't. Not only are there differences in how souls get ready for their next incarnation, but the same souls prepare in different ways from one life to the next. At this point in the session, I would ask my client, "I want you to explain what you are doing just before you leave the spirit world to incarnate into your current life." There will be a variety of responses from clients, depending on the nature of the life to come and the level of advancement of the soul. The following is a short list of reasons behind differing client reactions. A. Some clients will remember nothing about the final phase of incarnation preparations. They recall finishing with life selection and then being inside their mother's womb. B. Some clients will talk about going to a preparation class for a final review of those aspects that are most important in the life to come. There are two variables here. One, they may meet only with guides. Two, they may meet with guides and other souls who will be playing important roles in their lives. C. Some souls will say a quick goodbye to a few friends in their soul group and immediately go to the place of embarkation in the company of their guide. D. Some souls appear to be in solitude just before moving away from the spirit world. There are two variables here. One, they are unaware of a guide escorting them and suddenly find themselves in a fetus. Two, they are escorted by a guide to the place of embarkation and experience the same sort of travel route into the fetus as most other souls. I don't want to leave the listener with the impression that saying goodbye to soul group companions is ever short or non-existent. It depends on when these farewells occur in the sequence of spiritual events. A quick au revoir, just as the soul is ready to leave, does not necessarily mean an absence of longer goodbyes at an earlier stage. Also, remember that a portion of our energy is not leaving the spirit world, so it isn't as if our entire being is departing. What is left could be very active or inactive, depending how much we take with us, as I have mentioned under the topic of soul division. In either case, a soul's farewells to friends at some point can be intense, especially with those who will be incarnating with us into our next life. the preparation or recognition classes designed for souls who are leaving the spirit world are often conducted by director coordinators who are not the personal guides of the souls attending these classes. These directors, also known as prompters, are specialists in the dress rehearsals of meaningful scenes in the upcoming life. Essentially, they conduct the final reinforcement memory drills for departing souls. It is not unusual for the soul to be aware of companion and affiliated souls nearby who are slated to play important roles in the drama about to begin. The actual timing of birth in this new generation of children is apparently of no consequence for prep class attendants. As an example, you are 5 years older than your wife, but both of you will attend the same prep class concerning your meeting each other. There are clients who will describe their prep class as primarily oriented around the future recognition of soulmates. Others will tell you they experience reinforcement on one specific karmic lesson, and some will state their class had a combination of elements. When people feel deja vu and synchronicity about certain events that they cannot explain in life, it is quite possible these sensations are reminders of their prep class. There are many kinds of questions you might direct to your client at this phase of the session. 1. What triggers or red flags were you given in advance to help you remember the importance of certain events? 2. Can you tell me how you were supposed to remember significant people in your life? 3. What is the most meaningful aspect of your last prep class? In rare instances, you might hear a client exclaim that in the moments before embarkation into a new life, they needed a little more persuasion or confidence building by their guide. While these trepidations are very uncommon, no soul is forced to reincarnate if they want to back out at any time. I have already mentioned that only rarely have I encountered a soul who asked for a replacement once they were in the fetus. The majority of your clients will state that rather than being anxious, they were filled with joy, hope, and expectations about the life ahead. The percentage of my clients in this category was over 80%. Since a small percentage of clients do express some trepidations, I would recommend you consider asking the following questions in some form about client attitudes toward rebirth. 1. What were your primary reasons for coming this time around? 2. Did you sense it was your duty to come, as if a new incarnation was inevitable, or could you have stayed behind? 3. Would you characterize your attitude toward rebirth as being A. joyful and full of anticipation about opportunity for a new incarnation, B. one of indifference about another life, C. cautious or reluctant about rebirth? I have given a descriptive case example of the actual return to Earth by the soul under Chapter 15, Case 29 in Journey of Souls. If your client is able to describe this procedure, they will often say their guides accompany them a little way to a kind of exit portal before separating. The soul then has the sense they are passing down through some sort of vortex or tunnel back to Earth. In many cases, the client will only vaguely remember the last stage of rebirth. They will remark, "I went from light into darkness, the portal, and then I felt warmth in the womb." Completing the spiritual regression. After your analysis of the client's preparations for embarkation are completed, it is time to wrap up all the loose ends of the session. I often ask open-ended questions at this stage, such as, "Well, how do you feel about all that you have learned?" You will find that after experiencing the meaning of life through spiritual regression, clients are often struck by how seriously they have taken themselves over matters of no great concern. Seeing the larger purpose behind all their experiences gives the client greater perspective. After their sessions, clients write to me explaining that they are now addressing the more significant aspects of their lives with greater focus. After viewing their spiritual existence between lives, decisions which lie ahead for the remainder of this life fill most clients with a new resolve. They know their body is a precious gift that they helped to choose. They see life as an opportunity for learning and enrichment and feel a greater confidence in themselves. Above all, they realize that their reality has order and purpose. By now, both you and your client are very tired at the end of a session that has lasted over 3 hours. At some point near the end, I always ask a catch-all question. Before we close and leave the spirit world, I want you to take a last look around and tell me if there is anything we might have missed of significance that you would like to discuss. Most clients say no. Perhaps this is because they are as worn out as I am. However, once in a while, something in their mind crops up, such as an activity we missed, or one specific issue that needs to be clarified. By the time the session is over, most clients believe they have recovered those memories that were intended for them. Awakening the LBL Client. Your LBL client must be brought out of their deep trance state with much care. After such a long period of hypnosis, the major part being in a superconscious theta state, your subject is going to feel a great heaviness and even numbness of the body. They might also be a little disoriented for a few minutes. This is because each person experiences an ego transformation from full soul engagement back into their current personality. For this reason, awakening must be handled slowly and with care. Just because you have brought them out of trance does not mean clients immediately shed the vestiges of their soul connection. Indeed, for the rest of their lives, the client will retain a stronger internal connection with their soul. As they awaken, the client comes from a very safe place, the sanctuary of their permanent home, back into the hectic and demanding physical environment of planet Earth. Therefore, this transition must not be abrupt. I would like to offer an example of how I start my awakening instructions at the end of spiritual regression. As we begin now to leave the high realm of your soul mind and the beautiful existence in the spirit world between your lives on Earth, I want you to remember this loving world is always with you. Everything we have talked about, all your thoughts, your memories, and your insights will be retained to help and empower you as you complete the remainder of your current life with renewed energy and purpose. Allow this all-knowing knowledge to settle calmly within your conscious mind in proper perspective. Allow yourself to now feel completely whole as a single person that is you. Your immortal self is completely joined with your human self as a single unit as we now return back, higher and higher, back through the tunnel of time into the present. Certainly this mantra could be considered a post-hypnotic suggestion for the client, but I use it for transition to an awake state. As a general rule, I do not believe that the traditional use of post-hypnotic suggestions are a necessary component of spiritual regression, particularly since you are sending the client home with tapes of their session. Post-hypnotic suggestions can last for some time, but I feel that spiritual regression has an enduring quality all by itself. From my experience, the assimilation of all memories recalled from the soul mind about the spirit world will be retained by the client without formalized post-hypnotic suggestions. All the studies of post-hypnotic suggestion indicate that when it is used, information which is especially relevant and meaningful will have greater durability. I have previously mentioned under the subject of guides that you might state, "You will never forget the images and exchanges with your personal spirit guide." The use of post-hypnotic suggestions might be appropriate in other specific areas, such as reinforcing any desensitization you performed for past life trauma. Also, I don't rule out the possibility that designated memory reinforcements may be necessary with certain clients involving the council chamber or a particular soul to promote healing. These are judgment calls based upon each client and their session. I would not recommend that you attempt to breach any client blocks of amnesia about the spirit world or the client's future destiny through the use of post-hypnotic suggestions. All hypnosis facilitators have their own methods for returning clients to a full awake state. What I have offered are my own preparations before the usual final awake instructions, where I will begin a numbers countdown. During this time, I will ask for very deep breaths, including the customary commands for eye focus and clear-headedness, while I call for increased circulation and encourage clients to feel relaxed, happy, and fully refreshed. The exit interview. After your client awakes from their spiritual experience, many will stare off into space for a few minutes in awe of what they have seen. Some will be tearful, while others will laugh for joy. Most feel the weight of expectations their spiritual masters have for them. I try to say very little at first because I want to give my client this quiet time for reflection. I will encourage them to just sit still and recover while I hand them a glass of water and prepare their tape recordings. You will have two types of client responses to an LBL session. There are some who do not want to talk much about what they have seen because it is so private and personal. They wish to collect their own thoughts in the days ahead without input from you. Often they will contact you later. A majority of clients, however, will immediately want to process the highlights of their session. In the beginning, I would advise letting them lead the conversation in whatever direction they wish. They are overwhelmed with self-discovery. On a conscious level, they now realize the floodgate has been opened to their inner selves. While feeling excitement, they also have the sense of divine responsibility for their lives. This intensely personal validation of their identity brings authenticity to the client and their place in the world. It is important to realize that many clients will solicit advice from you about the meaning of their sessions, and this is something you should be cautious about. Our task is to assist clients in finding their own interpretations to visualizations from the spirit world. Clients have a tendency to want direction and to have you help them with interpretations. Naturally, you can offer opinions regarding their life in the spirit world, but I would be careful about commenting on their future decision-making based on this information. A good idea is to ask them general questions, such as, 1. What did you gain most from your session? 2. How do you understand yourself better as a result of what you have learned? 3. In what way do you now have a greater comprehension of life and your place in it? 4. What possibilities and alternatives do you see that are open to you now that you have this information? Your client may not be able to address any of these sorts of questions right after their session with you. Spiritual regression is intended to give the client greater direction and purpose, but how they choose to do this is up to them. They may need a great deal of time for self-evaluation. One of the advantages of the exit interview is to allow the client to become fully conscious from a long hypnosis session. This can take at least a half hour. You don't want them to rush out and jump into an automobile until they are fully focused. This is why I watch my client's eyes and body motor movements carefully. While the subject is recovering from deep hypnosis, I explain that in the days and weeks ahead, more bits and pieces from their released soul memories may continue to surface in flashbacks and dreams. I urge them to keep a diary or journal handy for jotting down spontaneous notes to build upon the data contained on their audio tapes. This brings up the issue of repeat LBL visits. Since no single session will ever contain all the information people would like to have about their existence, it is natural for some clients to talk about returning a second time. They may request this on the spot, but it is more likely they have gone home, listened to their tapes, reflected further on certain parts of the LBL session, and decided they want to see you again to learn more. It is my recommendation that, in all fairness, you should warn clients before they leave your office that they may not be able to recall anything more of substance with further sessions. The reasons why a second LBL session would not be fruitful range from the client's capacity, inclinations of their guide, lessons to be learned, their stage of development, and so on. On the other hand, there is no question that a repeat session could bring out more substantial information with certain clients about their spiritual life. There is no prescribed approach to repeat sessions. Those subjects who had to work especially hard in hypnosis to access the spirit world are the ones you would want to take back through the childhood, past life, spirit world route. With other post-LBL clients, you can avoid childhood regression and just work with induction, deepening, and a past life. The deepening may not take as long the second time, especially if you have given your client a post-hypnotic suggestion from the initial session that any future regression sessions with you will go quickly and easily. You should use another past life and repeat sessions to gain natural entry into the spirit world. The past life should be a different one than before to give the client additional variety and detail. You will both learn more about the self-actualization of the subject's soul in different bodies with repeat sessions. Conclusions. Many clients leave my office clutching their tapes as if they were gold, and I wonder how they are going to apply what they have learned to give their lives new direction. I always feel that I could have probed for more information, helped them in better ways, and done more to bring them a greater awareness of all the wonders of their spiritual life. Every session is unique, and whenever I am able to assist a client in unlocking their hidden knowledge about an immortal existence, I feel privileged. When I started so many years ago, I had to break new ground about the use of hypnosis to reach our life between lives, which you will not have to do. At the same time, I know that future spiritual regressionists will carry this work far beyond what I have done. LBL hypnotherapy carries a great responsibility to give as much of yourself as you can, because the sensibilities of each client are so complex. In discovering their immortality, LBL clients see an unbroken life of succession in their existence. This gives them an understanding of their place in the continuity of life, death, and rebirth. Despite their current circumstances, people will leave your office knowing they have a permanent home in the afterlife, a place of love, peace, and forgiveness with highly advanced beings who care about them. You will have clients who will ask that now they have gained all this information about themselves, what are they going to do with it? They are concerned about meeting the lofty goals that brought them into this life. I try to reassure them that our masters have infinite patience with us. I tell the departing client that we are measured not so much by what we do for ourselves, but by how we have helped others along the way. I explain that in each lifetime we may falter, make mistakes, take the wrong paths, and make poor choices, but with every opportunity and decision, we grow. The mark of a distinctive life is having the courage to keep picking ourselves up after setbacks and finishing our lives strong. This concludes Life Between Lives by Michael Newton, Ph.D., narrated by William DeVries. Copyright 2004 by Michael Newton, Ph.D. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Llewellyn Worldwide Limited and was produced in the year 2015 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers, or call toll-free 877-7-TANTOR to request a catalog.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.